you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. In the spirit of a role-playing game, the Twilight Histories is a show where you are the hero. You will travel to strange and exotic lands that could have been, but never were. You will meet people and see sights, visit wonders and escape terrors that did not exist in our universe. Today's show was written and produced by Devin Field. And if you want to put this into a category, it would have to be horror. In my opinion, this is one of the creepiest Twilight Histories episodes we've released in a long time. The ending gave me the chills. This show was first released to our patrons. Please come and join us on Patreon to unlock tons of shows you won't find anywhere else. When you support us on Patreon, you help grow the Twilight Histories. Patreon is how we fund our podcasters like Devin Field to create amazing stories like this one you'll hear today. This is Sacred Arrivals by Devin Field.
You glance behind you. There's no one coming up the stairs, and the man at the desk is asleep. You take a step forward. No reaction. Another step. Into the open this time. Still nothing. This is your chance. Now, while the security guard snores in his chair. Now, before anyone comes. A deep breath. Time to go. Quickly but quietly, you pad across the floor. Just like playing ninjas, you think. The guard stirs, but you're past him. You're already around the corner and slipping down the corridor, heart racing, trying not to run. You know you can't run. Another corner, and you come to a door. It's the door. You hesitate for a moment, the spokes of the door handle in your grasp. You're not at all sure that you're ready. You have to be ready. Now, before your father realizes that his ID is missing. Now, before he notices that you're missing. Not that it's likely for him to notice much of anything at all. Not with a scroll in front of him. With a brief strain, you spin the door open, stepping through and quickly maneuvering it shut behind you. Too quickly, you wince at the noise. But there's no sound of running feet. You glance around the room. Perfect. Everything is as it was when you'd been here before. The controls, the platform, and there against the wall, changing stalls, their curtains pulled. On that day your father had brought you here to see it all, they'd held a Roman legionnaire's clothing and something else, which you didn't recognize. You had asked, but he'd only told you it had been the customer's special request. He didn't seem very happy about it. You cross to the desk, tap your father's card, and check the screens. Bookings for later in the afternoon, just like you'd thought. That means everything will already have been prepared. You check the hallway one more time, and then seal the door again. It's time to go now. Even your father can't be oblivious forever. But where are you going? You check the screens again. There are two clients coming in, both bound for medieval France, but for very different histories. Your eyes slide and slip over paragraphs of description and complicated timeline charts. In one file, there's a crusade. You do know something about that. But then there's also Albigensians, or Cathars, whatever those are. There's a whole folder labeled New Heterodoxies, and a subheading on something called Sacred Arrivals. You stare in rising confusion before turning away from the screen. You'd better just check the outfits. You slide open the first curtain and groan in disappointment. The full, shining armor of a knight. It's everything you could hope for, but clearly not made for a 13-year-old's body like yours. It's just too big, and there's nothing at all the scissors in your pocket can do about that. You try the next curtain. Yes, this one will work. It only takes a moment of snipping away, and then you're out of your own clothes and into... Someone is at the door. You freeze. Remember to breathe again. Good thing it's locked. But you really do need to go now. You press the appropriate button on the screen, and then take your place on the platform. Everything would already have been programmed by last night at the latest. Your father told you that. You close your eyes. There are more sounds outside now, and someone is coming in. But you're already gone. You find yourself lying on your back, somewhere muddy. You can feel it settling coldly on your sides and legs, seeping round your ears. The stars above you are bright, the trees beneath them lit in the flickering light of flames. A lot of flames. Something thumps wetly into the ground near your head. Suddenly, you're being wrenched upward. A hand is pulling you by the front of your clothes and dragging you to your feet. There is a man's face leaning down and pressed in close, the mouth moving wide. But you're not hearing anything. Past him, you can see buildings burning, people running, blades in the firelight. You stare. It's hard to pick out sides in the dark. But there are sides. Or there were. There was a battle here. But there isn't one now. There is a chase. There is a slaughter. You see someone stumble and fall. And before he can get back up, others are on him. He's speared in the side as he tries to push himself to his feet, collapses, and is stabbed again. Your stomach heaves and you throw up, violently. Until your body tears at the emptiness within you. Until the man at your side grabs you by the arm and pulls you stumbling into motion. It's like the sound is switched back on. The air is suddenly filled with screams and fire. With metal on metal and skin. The stranger starts into a run, yanking you along with him. You trip, almost fall. The stranger growls in your ear.
No time for that now. We have to get out of here.
He drags you on. You follow, sprinting through the bushes on shaky legs. The stranger, just ahead on his longer ones. Pulling you up whenever you stumble. Hissing whenever you slow for you to run. To keep going. Keep going. Your lungs claw for air. You run until the sounds of violence fade away behind you, replaced entirely by your own panting and the thumping of two sets of feet crashing through the dark. Your steps, light but clumsy. The stranger's more solid, but sure of foot. You run until you collapse exhausted next to a stream, the stranger at last letting you fall. You rest there a moment, too tired to worry about where you are, what just happened, and who this man is next to you. And almost immediately, you are asleep. You wake up thirsty and sore. Not just in your legs, but everywhere. The ground underneath you is hard and cold. You shiver and get to your feet. The stream from the night before is still there, and you kneel beside it, cupping your hands and scooping it up into your mouth. Soon, you are soaking, but refreshed. Only then do you look around and find that the stranger is gone. It's just you, the stream, the woods, and off in the distance, smoke. You remember the fire and screams the night before, and shiver again. Then it hits you. You're hungry, very hungry. Hungrier than you can ever remember being before. You look around in a daze. There's no food. Of course there isn't. You're in a forest somewhere in medieval France, and you have nothing. But there must be something to eat in these woods. Maybe boar? You vaguely remember stories of hunting parties gone wrong, kings being thrown from their horses and killed. Maybe not boars, then. Berries? You pick a direction, one away from the smoke, and you start walking in search of food. The morning is nice enough, and you try to distract yourself, to think about anything but your stomach. You notice how clean the air is, and how many birds you can hear, how the sunlight streams down through the leaves above, and how the wet leaves squish just so below your feet. For all your hunger, you feel lighthearted. The scenes of the night before, with you now only as if they were fragments from a dream. You feel very much like you're on an adventure now. One you can enjoy. And you tromp happily forward, ducking under branches and keeping your eye out for something. Anything you can eat. You see the path first, and then you see the people coming down it. You drop behind a bush and watch them trooping by. They are fighting men in quilted armor, their faces darkened by dirt and what might be blood. But they have food. They must. The bags on their pack horses are stuffed. Your belly gurgles, and for a moment, you think it's impossible that they haven't heard it. But they don't stop. You're actually tempted to stand up and stop them yourself, ask them for something to eat. But you don't. You just watch and listen. They're talking about the night before, you think. Some chattering merrily, others more quiet and sober. One, you see, is excitedly miming a spear thrust with shouts for emphasis. Another is in the middle of telling a story, something about a wealthy miller and his daughter. And his friends find it hilarious, exploding with laughter as he finishes. A third, just as he brushes past your hiding place, shows something in a pouch to the man next to him. You see it too, and immediately feel sick. You clench your jaw tight, willing yourself not to throw up again. Or at least, not right now. You stay crouched, still as can be. Not even the spider that's crawled onto your hand can make you move. Not until they're gone. Only then do you rise, and immediately suck in your breath in shock. Across the path from you, the stranger from the night before has also stood from cover, and you barely manage not to yelp out loud in surprise. He nods at you, and turning away, gestures to follow him. Head down, you do so. You're not so sure you can trust this man, but then again, you're not so sure that you have much choice. You trail along behind him until you're well off the path. Eventually, he stops, taking a seat on a fallen log, and his head, now level with yours, he looks at you.
Are you hungry?
You nod, mutely, and sit. The stranger reaches into a satchel and passes across a small bundle of cloth. You pull at it eagerly, but as the last knot falls open on your lap, you stop. It's mushrooms. Of course it is. You hate mushrooms. The texture, the squish and squeak in your mouth. But you have to eat. You try one, a small, orangey, trumpet shape. It's every bit as bad as you remember, but you chew and swallow it down with difficulty, followed by another. The stranger watches you a moment, a look of amusement on his face, and then he passes over another little bundle. This one has cooked meat in it, now cold, and you tear into that more happily, cramming it into your mouth. Finally, you look up to the stranger. Is this boar? He laughs, shaking his head.
Rabbit, much easier prey.
Oh, some more chewing. You decide you might like rabbit. Better than mushroom, definitely.
Whose tunic is that you're wearing?
The man's question catches you by surprise. He's casual about it, careless almost, but you're not sure how to answer. You look down at your borrowed clothing. It's blue, now largely lost in yesterday's mud. Your work with the scissors, still painfully visible. You'd been rushed in cutting it down to fit. You search for an answer and settle on something that's almost the truth. It's my father's. The man nods, seeming to accept this.
From your hands, I'd say that father was a noble, or maybe a merchant. You've good cloth, too. But who would cut it like that?
You shift uncomfortably, and busy yourself with another bite of rabbit. He smiles.
You cut it. You cut it, thinking to hide your origins.
You're even more uncomfortable now, but the man continues.
You try to hide, but the rich one's robe, poorly cut, is still not the same as that of the poor.
He pauses, looking at you.
Don't worry, though. There's enough trouble here with all that's going on. Whatever you're hiding or running from, you've nothing to fear from me.
You swallow, finally finding your voice again. What is going on? He stares at you, amused.
Have you been kept in a tower your whole life, little one? Have you been locked away by serpents or monks?
You stare back mutely, uncertain. He sighs.
Well, little one, the Pope could no longer ignore it all. That's what's been happening. A few heretics is one thing, a few too many another. And now they say that his legate has been murdered. Even that might have been forgiven. There are few things that can't be. But I would guess that he's afraid. I imagine everyone is afraid now. Every last baron, king, and cardinal. They've heard things. Even in Rome now, they've heard things. And they all want to know if it's true. Their pets are crawling all over this region like ants, trying to find out if it's true. Who knows what they'll do when they learn that it is.
You wait as his silence stretches out between you. You wait until it makes you squirm. And then you ask, who are you? What are you doing here? He flashes you a smile, though not a happy one.
I'm one of those pets. I came to find out.
Find out what? What is happening here?
Something that is better seen than said. if it must be known at all. Come with me, little one. You can eat more as we walk, if you're still hungry.
The man rises quickly and strides off, and you, hurrying along to keep up, again find yourself following this stranger through the woods somewhere in France. Going... where are you going? That's the question you're trying to answer as the morning wears on and gives way to what you think must be afternoon. The sun is higher in the sky, and you are hungrier again. But you get little more out of the stranger, not even his name. You tell him yours at one point, hoping to get him talking, but he doesn't pay much attention. Just says, "Of course, little one," checks the sky, and keeps walking. You largely give up after that. Mostly, you stay in the woods. Twice, you cross fields, but the stranger doesn't seem happy about it. He rushes along at an even greater pace, your shorter legs struggling beneath you. You don't know when you last walked this far. Maybe never. Why would you have? For all that you don't know where you're going, you're pretty sure that the stranger definitely does. His way forward is always direct, with no sign that he's ever lost or uncertain. He is taking you somewhere, or to something. You're not sure which. It's well past midday when you reach the village, and it doesn't sneak up on you. You know it by its smell. It's burning, stinking smell that crawls into the back of your throat and then dies there. It's not something you're ever likely to forget. When you first notice it, you look to the stranger next to you, but there's no sign in his face that he smells it. Not even moments later, when it's even stronger. Not even when it becomes truly unignorable. It is not a village, despite its walls, but it was one recently. Recent enough that its wreckage still smokes. Recent enough that you expect the bodies outside the gates to get up and talk. But of course, they don't. They just lie there in mutilation and decay, twitching under the attention of the crows. You look down into the face of one of them, a man's open mouth and equally open sockets staring back, empty where the eyes should be. His ears seem to have been cut off and burned. You are sick again. There is a hand at your shoulder, the stranger squeezing your arm reassuringly as you try to gather yourself.
"They should have buried them, little one. They should have buried them."
You nod, silently, still staring down at that ruined face, and a new voice interrupts your thoughts.
"He told us not to."
You straighten up, startled, feel the hand on your shoulder tense.
"The abbot told us not to."
The speaker is standing between what is left of the gates. There is a sword at his side. You swallow, shifting back a bit behind your companion. He steps forward, eyes fixed on this new arrival.
"You were here."
The other man nods.
"I was. And I was here when we made ready. When some of us went to ask the abbot how we ought to sort the Christians from the heretics. How we would know whom to offer mercy. But do you know what he told us?"
You wait, the man beside you also silent.
"They told me that he said, 'Kill them all, for God will know his own.' That was what the abbot said, that God would do the sorting for us. So that's what we did. The children, the women, the men, fighting or not. And anything else?
Your companion's question takes you off guard. It seems to strike the other man that way too, an odd look on his face.
What do you mean? Was anyone else killed?
There is a long pause, during which the man looks at you, at the stranger at your side who'd asked the question, at the trees behind you both. He grimaces.
No, nothing like that.
Without waiting for any further questions, he turns on his heel and disappears back into the ruins he came from. Beside you, the stranger watches him go for a moment, before also turning away.
Come, little one, there's nothing here for us.
You follow the stranger on tired legs, thinking over what you'd heard. Anyone else, he'd said, but not men, women, or children. Or was it anything else? You open your mouth to ask him, but he just shakes his head.
You're going to see soon enough.
And you do. It is not the smell that reaches you first this time. It's the sound, or something like it. Is it sound? It's in your ears and in your head, so it must be. But it's different. It starts quietly, as if something like this can be measured in terms of quiet and loud. And then it builds. It seems to begin at the base of your skull, and then expand. You find it hard to think. You rub at your ears with the knuckles of your hands, stumble, and catch yourself against the trunk of a tree. The noise is in your bones, and it's hard to breathe. Broad, thick leaves are pressed into your hands. The stranger is right in front of you, miming for you to chew them and stuff them in your ears. Sweating and cold now, you do so and feel immediate relief. It isn't perfect, but it is much better, and you can breathe again. You can think. What's happening? You mouth, or maybe shout. What is this? He puts a finger to his lips and points ahead at something just out of view. He waves you on, leading the way at a doubled-over jog through the trees. You follow, packing the leaves deeper into your ears against the sound, trying to squeeze every bit of protection from them that you can. Then he signals for you to stop behind a tree, pointing again. You look, and you see them, the people coming down the path through the woods. You look, and you see those who are with them. There are 40 of them, maybe 50. Some of them twirl and stumble with joy on their faces. They lurch here and there across the path, sometimes tumbling from its edges, only to be herded back by the others. You look closer at those others and shudder in recognition. Their ears are mutilated, just like the ones you saw on the body at the gate. You watch this strange dance for a while. Those who seem unable to see where they are going, and those others who do not hear what is happening. The wounded shepherds and their crazed sheep. And then you see the group that is coming along behind them, in three little clusters. There are 6 people in each, and from the way they move, you can tell their ears have been closed. With the poles on their shoulders, they carry a chair, a kind of throne, really. 3 groups, 3 thrones. You squint at the figures seated in them, and feel a kind of cold certainty. They are not human. They sit in a vaguely human way. They have two arms and two legs. They have a head, and though you're too far to make out the details, a face. But you know they are not human. You know it, and are horrified by it. You stare out from your hiding place in growing revulsion, but utterly transfixed, pierced where you stand by this otherworldly presence being paraded towards you. You cannot take your eyes from them, but at the same time, your eyes can scarcely focus on them, can't really fit them into the picture before you. So you just stand there as they close in, the whole bunch of them. The ones who teeter ever at the edge, the ones keeping them on it, and those three born above it all. It's all getting louder as they close in. Neither the leaves nor the hands at your ears able to do much now to muffle it. None of it making any sense. But you stand, frozen, just caught where you are. As the throne bearers pass close by, one of the seated figures turns its head and looks down, straight at you. You stare up into its enormous dark eyes, like two pools of the night sky. You hold that gaze for a moment, and then crumble, your body finally allowing you to drop to the earth and bury your face in the ground. You stay that way, sweating and sick, until they are gone, until the sound is gone. Finally, it is. You feel a hand at your shoulder and know the stranger is there. You manage the question. What was that? What are they?
Maybe angels, little one. That's what the people here think. Or maybe something else. Whatever they are, and wherever they've come from, their arrival here changes things. It changes everything. And none of the knights who came here to do the Pope's bidding can change that.
You listen, and you lie there, too weak to do much else but think on his words. Things do feel changed. You feel changed, and you do not think it is something that can be undone.
That was Sacred Arrivals by Devin Field. If this show gave you a chill down your spine, like it did for me, please consider supporting Devin by joining us on Patreon. When new people sign up, I'm able to ask our podcasters like Devin, Tristan, and Kevin to produce more stories for you. It's as simple as that. Many people have asked why I don't produce more shows. The answer is I would love to. I have so many ideas brewing around in my head, and I sometimes feel frustrated that I can't build them out into stories faster for you. I love writing stories for you. I've got one brewing right now where there's a Mongol ship that's blown across the Pacific, leaving the small horde stranded in North America. They learn of a sprawling grassland somewhere beyond a mighty mountain range. Can you imagine the Mongols tearing across the American plains? I have a show I really want to produce where the Nazis develop a serum that turns soldiers into savage beasts. they drop off crates of this serum into the Stalingrad cauldron during its final days before the surrender. And I really want to do some shows that are set in locations we don't often touch on, such as the Southern Hemisphere and along the equator. Africa, Southeast Asia, Australia, South America. I'd love to do a futuristic India, for instance. They have such a rich culture, and I think it would look visually spectacular set in space. Take the incredible architecture of Rajasthan and project that into a moon castle with Hindu shrines in local craters. I have so many ideas. I think about them all the time. But it's time that's the barrier for me to get these done. One day, I hope to write Twilight History stories for you, for a living. And then, instead of just thinking about them, I'd get to actually produce these ideas into shows. I believe we will get there. We just have to keep growing our audience and getting more patrons to sign up. I just want to thank you so much for listening and just being there on this journey. A handful of you have been around for the 10 years this show has been running. Many more of you were picked up along the way. We're a merry band of travelers. I just want to stop and say I appreciate every one of you. So thank you. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.